Legoland Podcast with David Amoyal.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to all of you that don't speak Italian. Thank you so much for joining us for the first episode of the week of the Calcio Land podcast. So today, it being Monday, we of course have our winners and losers from the Serie A weekend. We have the great Twitter questions from our listeners and Twitter followers. And we're going to end the podcast with a brief but very insightful interview with my colleague from the Marzio site, Paolo Mangone, to talk about the mid-table, the relegation race, so kind of the teams that we don't cover as frequently during the podcast. But before we get to all that, I'm joined by our great friend, producer, co-host of the show, Alex Goldberg. His Twitter video, Twitter game recaps, YouTube channel continue to succeed, which is great to see. So, Alex, let me take you back to Serie A, and I have to ask you, both you and I have been fairly skeptical about Milan going into the season, but I think even more so during the season. But I have to say, despite all the injuries, the Higuain suspension, Gattuso has them in fourth place right now. I know there was a big scare during the week with the Europa League. But I think, you know, if you're a Milan fan and you're looking at ways the team can improve, you know, you have Higuain coming back. Some of the injured players should be on the mend pretty soon. We have Paqueta, the Flamengo midfielders, about to arrive in Milan. So there's kind of a lot of momentum for him. So I have to ask you, do you think it would be reasonable to say, as it stands now, Milan are the favorite to clinch that last Champions League spot?
Reasonable? Absolutely. I think they're in great position, at least right now, to be fourth place in Serie A by year's end. They're simply getting results with not nearly a full-strength squad, so that's always a good sign, and major credit to Gattuso for that. Anytime you get 3 points with Abate and Zapata as your center-back duo, that's impressive. And then speaking of another duo, they're getting an awfully good combination from Frank Kessié and Bakayoko. Bakayoko? Three straight man-of-the-match performances for Bakayoko. Once again, huge credit to Gattuso, but credit to Bakayoko as well. Clearly, he has found a bit of form, some newfound confidence, which is huge for a player, because when Chelsea gave him to Milan, I've never seen a player more lost. So the fact that Milan are getting these results, getting points however they can with not nearly their full-strength squad, that is very promising. I'll be more convinced when they face Torino next week at the San Siro. If they grind out 3 points against Torino, who's been pretty good this season, I'll be much more convinced. And then I'll be way more convinced when they win a game that they're definitely supposed to win. A couple weeks from now, they host Fiorentina, who has not been very good. So if they do what they're supposed to and get 3 points then, well, yes, Milan are really headed in the right direction. But yeah, right now, David, especially considering maybe the teams behind them, I definitely think Milan has a good shot at fourth place. That's my answer. What about you?
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I echo a lot of what you say. I mean, it wasn't that long ago that Gattuso was calling out Bakayoko publicly. There was talk he was going back to Chelsea in January, and now it's the opposite. Now it's like it looks very likely that Milan's going to use the option to buy him outright this summer. I know they're talking to Chelsea on some other players that we've discussed on the podcast. So really quite the turnaround. To me, you know, what's interesting is Gattuso really does seem to go up and down a lot. You know, that match midweek against the team from Luxembourg that could have turned into a disaster. And then this win against Parma, there's also some tweets out there, some videos, some really nice run of plays from Milan. So I think you have to feel really good. To me, ultimately, you know, if you think Milan's going to finish fourth or not, to me, it comes down to, do you believe that Lazio's stars, other than Immobile, because he's been kind of a one-man wrecking crew, if they're going to get it back together? I still believe, as it stands now, and now look, Milan is going to be very active in the January window. As it stands now, I still like Lazio squad a little bit better than Milan, but you know, it just really depends how much you believe in their stars, Milinkovic-Savic and Luis Alberto, making a comeback. So let's make this a little bit broader discussion, Alex. One of our Twitter followers on the Calcio Land podcast wanted us to make some updated predictions for the top six. We did them at the beginning of the year. For the most part, we've been on track. You've been very correct on Roma, probably definitely more so than I have. So let me ask you now, if you had to rank the top six on how it's going to end the season, and how would you have it?
All right, David. So my updated top six Serie A rankings only have one change from when I gave them before the season started. Of course, I have the old lady, Juventus, in first place. Don't need to spiel about that any longer. In second place, I have Napoli. I'm confident about that one. I know they're tied with Inter right now in points, but we're recording this before Napoli even play Atalanta. No matter what happens in that game, even if Napoli lose, I still have Napoli in second place. But I don't have Inter far behind. I have them in third place. I definitely think they will be no worse than third place. I've been impressed with them lately, so I definitely think third is the lowest they will finish. Then I have Milan in fourth place. I'm definitely the shakiest on Milan compared to the first, second, and third places I've given, but I do think Milan are the favorites for fourth. As I talked about in the first question in this segment, they're definitely trending the right direction, especially considering some of the players they will get back. So my one change from when I first gave these rankings before the season is I have Lazio in fifth now. Originally, I had Lazio in fourth and Milan in fifth. Lazio, though, I still give a chance for fourth. They're right on Milan's heels. And talking about Milinkovic-Savic, and I know we've done that ad nauseum on this podcast, it's been no secret that he's had a down season so far. But lately, since November, I think he's had a bunch of solid and sturdy performances. Not the sparkly and eccentric displays like we're used to with Milinkovic-Savic, but as Inzaghi said, he is playing more of a defensive role, so that does take an adjustment period, and I definitely think he's been solid. I think he's been solid, and he can still get better. So it's a little bit of a wild card. If all of a sudden Milinkovic-Savic started giving us anywhere close to the performances he was having last year, that could be enough to propel Lazio to fourth place. But right now I have them fifth. And yeah, I have not been high on Roma all season long. That's going to continue. I have Roma on a shaky sixth place. That easily could go to Torino right now. And I know Roma are barely behind Torino, but still, I'm so not sold on Roma. And that's not a negative reflection on Di Francesco. I do rate Di Francesco. But as I've said all season long, I feel like he has such a tough job and task on his hands. I feel like Roma, the collection of parts, is just a Mr. Potato Head collection of parts. Someone just closed their eyes and said, we'll have some youngsters here, we'll have some old players here, and it's balance, right? That's balance, and it'll all work out. But I don't think the team has been constructed very smartly, and I think Di Francesco just still has such a tough job on his hands. I still think Roma will need to try their asses off just to finish sixth. So I'm going to have them in a share of sixth place with Torino, just to emphasize how down I am on Roma getting anywhere into the top five for sure. So David, that's my top six right now. What do you got?
Yeah, I echo a lot of your sentiments. I think the two teams that surprised me the most in a positive way, definitely Napoli. I mean, we've talked a lot about it. The closer the season got, and then once I started seeing them play, I was like, okay, maybe I went too far and thinking they'd have they'd fall off a cliff from the previous season. So obviously I have Juve first. You have Napoli second. I still think the gap between Inter, who I have third, there's a much smaller gap between Napoli and Inter than there is between Juve and Napoli, in my opinion. Sorry, Napoli fans. I've been saying that for a while. The standings seem to confirm that. I'm going to put Milan right now fourth. For me, again, this is really close. Now, this gap between Milan and Lazio, very, very close. Definitely a bigger gap between Inter and Milan for me. After that, I have Roma, but we do have a resurgent Torino. It's been very impressive recently, and Atalanta too. We need to see how they do today against Napoli. So I could see Torino and Atalanta playing spoilers. I'm not sure they're good enough to finish in top four, but you know, maybe in top six, which comes with a Europa League spot, which is the goal for both those teams. They got off to really bad starts. The one team that fell off a cliff is Fiorentina. Definitely a lot of reasons for concern there.
All right. Well, our next segment, David, we do every Monday after we have a nice weekend of calcio. The only game we won't be able to cover is the Atalanta-Napoli game. So without further ado, who are winners and losers of episode 174 of the Calcioland podcast?
So we had some exciting games on Saturday. Let's start with them, with those. I really enjoyed that Empoli-Spal match. Both two provinciali teams that pretty intriguing stories. So we had Kurtic with a brace for Spal. It wouldn't be a Calcioland episode without mentioning Lazzari, the right wing back who set up beautifully the second goal as a winner. Really outstanding. One of the best players in the race to avoid relegation, period. We had Caputo for Empoli scoring again. He has now 7 goals for the season. Definitely Empoli big winner has to be manager Iacchini, replaced Andrea Zoli, who played, had the spirit of Sarri, played more offensive style. Iacchini is very pragmatic, and it's been paying off. So far, 7 points in 3 matches there. Then the Juve match. So winner has to be Bentancourt. He's been really excellent this season. You know, I wonder if you can make a case that he should be the third starting midfielder along with Matuidi and Pjanic. It's amazing how different that Tevez deal looks right now. I remember all the Juve fans so upset. Juve's acting like a charity, giving Tevez away for free. And now Bentancur, that looks like an absolute home run. I know Boca has a substantial percentage of the future resale, but this is, feels like a different Juve when it comes to holding on to their better players now. And that deal looks like a home run now. I also have as a winner Chiellini. Scored, was the man of the match on a few newspapers. Also had that really touching moment for Astori. In general, Chiellini, you know, with the Astori story, I think has been really handled it really well. Then we had Sampdoria's big win against Bologna. Dennis Praet scored a goal. He had signed an extension earlier in the week. A staple of our winners section is Quagliarella, had a brace there. Then 3 players you mentioned already on the Milan side of things. Gattuso, who is a winner for that match, had complained that they were playing the lunchtime match on Sunday after playing in the Europa League. I thought Milan did quite well. Bakayoko, man of the match, been really outstanding, as you mentioned. Recently, Cutrone scored, so he's a winner as well. And then we have Chievo, who after drawing Napoli at the San Paolo, they welcome Lazio at home. And look, Lazio, the one thing they've done well this season is beat all the provincial sides. Chievo holds them to a draw. Pellissier, who some people have to wonder why is he even still playing, scored. Birsa with a beautiful assist. To me, Birsa and Lazzari are really outstanding players in the race to avoid relegation. Chievo had some pretty exciting moments. You got to wonder, like Ventura leave and Chievo of all teams on court's Calcio Champagne. Pretty impressive there. We mentioned Immobile, one-man wrecking crew for Lazio. And then we had Torino, who beat Genoa. Mazzarri comes back after Scari was in the hospital. All the best to him. Important win. Ansaldi had a very good game there. So he's a winner as well. And then we had that really exciting match between Roma and Inter. Couple of winners on Roma. Definitely Zaniolo, player we've talked a lot on the podcast. People who know me, know that I'm not one to get excited with prospects. I am very skeptical with prospects, but he really is the real deal. Very impressive player. To me, from the get-go, I said that Nainggolan deal could look very differently if Zaniolo plays well. Granted, small sample size, but really, really good so far. To me, it's interesting. Zaniolo played kind of a trequartista role, but I see him eventually, once Lorenzo Pellegrini and Pastore back, I want to see him play the mezzala role, as we would call it in Italy. So in the midfield, you know, in a 3-man midfield, not the one in the middle, anyone on the side as a mezzala half winger. I think with his body and skill set, he could be like the perfect modern mezzala. Also, shout out to Florenzi, who played in a more advanced role and did quite well. So those are our winners. On the flip side, for the losers, I'm going to put 1,000 names first, because in his usual predictions, he said that Ronaldo was going to miss a penalty kick. When he sent me the predictions, I was like, oh, you forgot to mention, is Ronaldo going to miss a penalty? And he said he definitely would. I can't tell you how much I enjoyed people, some of our listeners, tweeting him right after Ronaldo scored. That made my day. But shout out to 1,000 on Sunday. He called that Roma Inter would be a draw. As losers, we have to put Fiorentina fans, some really despicable signs outside the stadium on Shiran, the Heysel tragedy. Look, that would be disgusting at any time, but especially when that weekend Chiellini and Juve tried to be really classy on Astori, I found that absolutely disgraceful. And I usually try not to get into those sorts of things too much. The two other losers, both Inzaghi brothers, Simone Inzaghi. Now Lazio is in retreat because the team has underachieved. His brother, Pippo, the team's in free fall. I had predicted at the beginning of the season that I could have seen Bologna get relegated. I really don't think they have match talent. Pippo Inzaghi, you know, doesn't have much track record in Serie A. Had that cup of coffee at Milan. Let's see. But a tough situation there. Then we also have Genoa coach Juric. I don't want to pick on him too much, but ever since Ballardini left, it's been an absolute disaster for them. On top of that, Juric took out Piontek after Romulo's red card, maybe alienating them there a little bit. As far as the losers for the Inter match, I'm going to put Perisic because we talk a lot about Milinkovic-Savic being pretty dreadful this season. I think Perisic has probably been just as bad. So, you know, I know he played great in the World Cup and he needs to recuperate, but he just really hasn't been the same. I'm also going to put as a loser Spalletti's mustache. I wonder if he knows that Movember had ended a few days before Sunday. He could have got rid of that. And VAR. I think, you know, VAR last season in Serie A, I think overall was a success. Other leagues wanted to do it. This season is just so arbitrary when VAR is used, not used. There were some instances this weekend that I'm like, if you're not going to use VAR in this situation, when are you going to use it? I actually think in some ways, not using VAR is even more controversial than a bad referee decision when there's no VAR. I think if you wanted to be a conspiracy theorist, you have even more opportunity to do so with VAR. But they definitely need to get their act together with that. But someone who definitely doesn't need to get their act together is the listeners who send in questions. As always, great, great stuff. Send us in questions. Serie A, transfer windows around the corner. You guys know we love music, TV, film questions, also podcasting and journalism. So which ones are we going to go over today, Alex?
All right, David, this is a good question. This player has certainly been playing well. Seen Bentancur's explosion this season, do you see Juventus pursuing more promising youngsters?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. And I think Bentancur, we talked about it, winners and losers, just been a really outstanding this season. But, you know, I have to say that other than center back, if you looked at Juve's squad overall, I wouldn't say it's particularly old. Granted, yeah, there was a lot said about Caldara being sold in the summer. Then Caldara doesn't play at all. Rugani's an afterthought. So I definitely think at center back, they're two starters, you know, are over 30. Chiellini's, you know, is in the last stretch of his career. Even Benatia's over 30. They definitely need to get younger there. But when you look at the rest of the squad at wing back, they have Cancelo, Deciglio, who's showing has been pretty good this season. In the midfield, we have Emre Can, who's just at the beginning of his prime. Up front, you know, we have Dybala, Bernardeschi. Those guys are just at the beginning of the prime, and Moise Kean. So I think Juve is not that old of a squad, but center back, they need it. A lot was made about the B teams, you know, being a great opportunity for Serie A clubs to, you know, stash youngsters. So far, Juve is one of the few teams to have it. So maybe that's not the area where Juve can bolster the youth team. But yeah, I think maybe it's a little bit unfair to say they haven't targeted enough young players, but center back is definitely an area they have to.
All right. Well, we talked a little bit about this at the top, David. How do you rate Gattuso's work overall?
Well, look, you know, like I said, there's so many divergence of opinion. I also think because Milan's such a huge fan base, you read so many different things on Twitter. But I think, look, realistically, he has the team in fourth place right now. I don't think anyone could have expected them to do better than that. I think any Milan fan would have signed for that at the beginning of the season. When you look at all the injuries and some of the setbacks with Higuain, you got to feel, you know, really good about where they are. I think the one area where he clearly needs to improve is on the substitutions. But right now with all the injuries, it's kind of hard to even, you know, say what, you know, if he's getting better there or not. So I think, look, overall, the bottom line speaks the loudest. Gattuso has the team where they need to be. The cavalry's coming in January. So I think right now, look, I'm someone who didn't think he would do well at all when he was hired. I thought he would be another sacrificial lamb. So I'm pretty impressed overall, I must say.
Honestly, Gattuso's doing God's work if he got Bakayoko to start playing like this. He really is. So major props to him. All right, David, next Twitter question. Will all the recent injuries buy more time for Eusebio Di Francesco?
I would think so. And look, you know, I've talked a lot about this. For me, at the end of the day, it's always easy to sack the coach. But it's like, you know, are you going to get someone that's better? And I would only make a change if the answer is yes. We've talked about Paulo Sosa and Donadoni being linked to Milan, to Rome. I mean, do you think those are upgrades? To me, no. If anything, it's a lateral at best. The new name is Montella. And look, he's really struggled the past few times. At least he's familiar with Roma as a club. Played, managed there. So let's see there. But I definitely think the injuries are buying him time. I think the draw, had he lost against Inter after losing to Real Madrid, it would have been tough. I do think, though, the qualification out of the group stage of the Champions League is buying him time for sure. I hate to make a political analogy, but he's making money to Roma with that. It's kind of like how Trump says, we're not going to mess with Saudi Arabia because they're bringing us in all the, they're bringing in all this money to us, and him personally too, I would add. But so I feel that, you know, Di Francesco brings Palotta that Champions League revenue. It's not that easy to sack him, especially because there isn't a great replacement lined up.
All right. Next Twitter question, David. Roma play well against the top teams and struggle against the rest. Will they lose to Cagliari next?
Yeah, I mean, the one thing that I'll say that's interesting is one thing that Roma and Di Francesco talks about this constantly is the lack of character on the team, that they fall behind and it becomes a problem and they don't come back. And look, they fell behind twice against Inter and they came back both times. Very controversial penalty decision. So I don't know. I think at least there's some hope there. Maybe Zaniolo, who had so much energy, he was celebrating against kind of his former team Inter. He played for their Primavera. Maybe he can bring a little bit of enthusiasm. So I'm not going to write off the Cagliari match, but as the listener who sent that in, that's an interesting test because those are exactly the matches where Roma has struggled more so than doing well against the top teams.
All right, well, he had a golazo at the weekend. David, should Roma consider selling Under to Arsenal?
So there were a lot of reports. We didn't have it on Di Marzio's side, but our friend John Solano, who's very plugged in with Roma, confirmed that there was an Arsenal scout in the standings at the Olimpico to watch Under. And look, the goal was amazing. I thought beyond that, he was really pretty poor. I have to say, I've been down on Under. That's not a tribute to Australia. That's my feeling towards him this season. I think he took a step back. But that goal was sensational. Although on the flip side, Handanovic has to be the leader of goals given up by a goalkeeper where it feels it's like the controller battery died on your PS4 and he did nothing, but still a beautiful goal by Under, although I didn't think he did much the rest of the match. Like, from my perspective, if a team made a huge offer for Under and I was convinced that Roma could get someone else, reinvest the money on someone equivalent, I would do it in a heartbeat. I think his stock is way up. Granted, he had that huge miss against Real Madrid, but last season he did well. He still gets a lot of hype. Another thing that John Solano pointed out is that Under recently changed agents. He went with Ramadani. A lot of times people see a player hire a changing agents as a sign he's probably on his way out, and there's definitely some truth to that. But it's interesting that Ramadani also became Pjanic agents last summer, and Pjanic ended up signing an extension with Juve. So don't write off completely, you know, because Under has Ramadani that on his way out. But me personally, and I'm sure I'm in the minority on this, if a huge offer came in, I would move him. You know, it's interesting to me that Torreira has done really well at Arsenal, from what I understand. And that's great. We had Salah the year before. I know you and I rate Marcos Alonso pretty differently, but he's been, you know, at least he's become a starter at Chelsea. I feel like the Serie A players now, maybe in the PL, which for a while, there's no doubt about it, they struggled. Maybe now they have a higher stock there. It seems though Arsenal really likes the really short guys from Serie A. You know, if Under goes, I hope he's a success like Torreira.
All right, David, should Simone Inzaghi consider benching Milinkovic-Savic?
So I know you mentioned that he's been a little bit more consistent. He hasn't been as bad. I agree with that. Like, when I watch, like, now I just don't see the things that used to excite me. about him, but I also don't see like the dreadful play. So I guess that's an improvement. Inzaghi also said that he's been using him in a more defensive position. So I don't know. Maybe he could use the Dybala treatment. Like Allegri was never afraid to bench Dybala, you know, when he felt he wasn't being particularly mature. But the difference is Juve has a great, great bench. Maybe Lazio a little bit less, although they do have Berisha, who's a pretty intriguing piece. So you know what? Maybe that's not the worst idea in the world. Right now, Lazio is in a retreat all week as we speak. They need to shake things up. So let's see what that happens. While we're on the topic of Milinkovic-Savic, I've been getting a lot of tweets about this. And Alex, you're my witness. I've been on the Milinkovic-Savic bandwagon well before last season. I know everyone's saying Milinkovic-Savic is a one-season wonder. I disagree. He was good this season before. On our first podcast, we talked about him. I had the Appreciation Society well before last season. So you want to give me crap that he has been bad? I've been the first one to tell you, but I've been on this bandwagon long before last season, and it wasn't just 1 year. So hopefully he does get back on track. I'm still concerned, but I'm with you. At least he's trending in the right direction.
Yeah, I can definitely vouch for that. We did not talk about this beforehand. You have certainly been on the SMS train for a long time, maybe ever since it got to the station in the first place. And getting back to the actual question, one game, bench him for one game tops. I don't think that's the answer. Once again, Inzaghi, as you just mentioned, has said that he's playing him in a more defensive position. He definitely is, and I think he's becoming more solid. Are you seeing the same magic that you used to see from him? Maybe not, but keep in mind, he's 23 years old. I think much of what people brought up, some of our guests brought up in terms of he might start slow because of all of the transfer rumors and because of all of the noise that he didn't perform well at the World Cup. He clearly had a long hangover regarding that. Maybe he's not fully out of the woods yet, but he's still an above average player in Serie A who is getting better game by game, and Lazio need him. So you're not, they don't have the same jurisdiction as Allegri and Juventus do to bench Dybala. He means way more game to game for Lazio than Dybala does game to game for Juventus. That's my opinion. So next Twitter question. This is interesting. Who is the most hated Serie A player by fans?
Well, so in Italy, there's this saying that Juve is both the most loved team in Italy and also the most hated, because everyone who isn't a Juve fan typically hates Juve. So I think the default answer has to be a Juve player. You know, it's really interesting that people that don't really know the inner workings of calcio, maybe don't follow it closely, are surprised by how many people in Italy genuinely don't like Gigi Buffon. Who, you know, for everyone, you know, that looks at from the outside, oh, a guy who went to the second division with Juve, despite what we saw with Real Madrid and that match, been usually a class act. Like, there's a lot of people that were shocked at how much disdain there is for Buffon in Italy. And I think Chiellini has taken that torch this season. And Chiellini looks a very on the pitch, a very tough guy. You know, not afraid to kick people, not afraid to complain. So I think he probably is. I think Bonucci is very close. Actually, I'm going to say maybe Bonucci is the most hated because Milan fans, and I think they have a point to not like him. And also Bonucci complains really nonstop. I always like to say that, you know, the Panini sticker albums, the Bonucci picture should be him with his hands crossed, like with the referee saying, what are you doing? Because I feel like that's the body language that I always associate with him. So I'd say it has to be between those two. If we pick a non-Juve fan, I'm going to go with Icardi. I know there's a lot of people that don't like him, his personality and all, and the stuff with Maxi Lopez is always brought up. If I missed anyone, let me know because I'm curious, but those were kind of my picks.
Sound pretty good. All right, David, let's move away from football for our last Twitter question. Let's move to Guns N' Roses. Now that 10 years have passed from its release, what do you think Chinese democracy's legacy will ultimately be?
Well, I'm proud that you knew this was Guns N' Roses. Not only is Sunny Hour rubbing off on you, rock and roll, too. That's awesome. So it was the 10th anniversary, I think about last week or whatnot. I wanted to talk about it, but we got sidetracked with a bunch of other stuff. So I actually think recently the legacy of it, I think, has really improved. For those not too familiar, it took like almost 20 years for this album to come out. Guns N' Roses had broken up the original lineup, which now is reunited in the early, like 93, 94, Axl Rose was working on this album forever. It really took on a life of its own. I saw Guns N' Roses in 2002 at the TD Garden, and Axl Rose was like with a whole new band, played some songs off of it, and then it didn't come out for like another 5 years or so. It was like really a crazy how long it took. So, you know, the hype and the mystery surrounding it is what people really know about it. But I'm a firm believer that if it didn't say Guns N' Roses, if it said Axl Rose solo or something else, it would really be received very differently. I stand behind that. I think there's a lot of really, really good songs on there. I think it's really the genius of Axl Rose, like the piano ballads, the hard rock stuff. His voice, he still really had it, and granted it was in the studio there. I actually think it's a really, really good album. And the reason that I think it's being remembered better now is the Guns N' Roses reunions. They actually been playing some songs off Chinese Democracy. I went to two of those shows the first year, the first one in Vegas and then later on at Gillette Stadium. And, you know, people around me that weren't familiar were like, oh, wow, this actually sounds really good. Also, you know, if you're into like guitars and great musicianship, like the guitar playing on that album is like second to none. I mean, obviously, Slash is the guitarist on Guns N' Roses. There's no doubt about it. But I wouldn't say he's the best guitar player Guns N' Roses ever had, technically. So if you're into like big, you know, guitar solos and all, definitely check it out. So I think the Guns N' Roses reunion helped. I think Axl Rose in general now, instead of being this recluse and a guy that always showed up late to gigs, been really professional, helped out AC/DC on their reunion, on their tour when their singer got ill. So I think there's a lot of positive vibe for him. And the other thing too is the movie Bohemian Rhapsody, who's been it's been a huge hit here in the U.S. I think that's helped him as well. Because, you know, the song Bohemian Rhapsody at Freddie Mercury's tribute concert when he died, like Axl Rose did it with Elton John. And I think a lot of people are seeing that performance now, maybe for the first time. And it's really excellent. And I really think it's not going to be that long until we have a Guns N' Roses movie, kind of like how the Queen one with Bohemian Rhapsody, since it's been a huge hit. And, you know, for me, the last thing I'm going to say about it is, you know, now with music, albums aren't that important anymore. Like now it's all about the singles and whatnot. And I think maybe Chinese Democracy is going to be one of the last like really famous albums because of all the mystery surrounding it. So before we get to the interview, I want to give a big thank you to a lot of our listeners. We got amazing feedback on that interview I did with Daniel Robertson, the former Juve social media manager. Thank you so much. I want to ask you, though, guys, we really need your support. Like, Alex really sick today, and he's here. We put in a lot of effort in the podcast to give you guys a great product. It's a free podcast as of now. I really don't want to have to change that. We really need your support. We're right on the verge of getting to where we need to be download subscription-wise. I know you guys hear me say that a lot, but we've been kind of plateauing. Still in a good place, but we really could use your help. So it really doesn't take long. If you want to retweet an episode that you like, tell your friends that you enjoyed the podcast. That's a huge help. Another way to do it is leave us a review. You guys hear me say this all the time, but if you're listening to us on an iPhone, just go to your podcast app, search Calchaland, scroll down, leave us 5 stars. We'll take you 10 seconds and really help us. So we really appreciate your support, and please keep it going. And now we're going to turn it over to an interview I did with my colleague Paolo Mangone. We're going to talk basically about all the teams we don't cover in segments, from the race to avoid relegation to the mid-table. And thanks for your support. We'll chat with you on Thursday. Okay, I think we're due a deep dive on the mid-table and what's going on in the race to avoid relegation. A lot has changed since we had our expert on this subject, Paolo Mangone. You guys all know him. He's one of my colleagues on the Marzio side. Paolo, welcome back to Calcioland. Always a pleasure to have you on.
Thank you, David. It's glad to be back.
Okay, so before we get into your area of expertise, we're recording this right after a fairly controversial and entertaining match between Roma and Inter. So I won't even lead you on. What was your main takeaway from what we just saw?
Well, it was a fair result. Both teams deserved the point. And, you know, I can't really complain about the penalties. Brozovic made that move. Bono hit his forehand, forearm. You know, it's pretty straightforward on that one.
Yeah, it felt a little bit like a makeup call, and I'm with you there overall. A fair result based on what we saw. So let's get into the meat and potatoes of why I wanted to have you on. And today we're going to start from the race to avoid relegation. So we've seen the teams that have made a managerial change. It has worked quite well for them so far. Chievo got two good results against strong opponents, Napoli and Lazio. Empoli went from an offensive style-minded coach, someone who had still a little bit of the spirit of Sarri and Andrea Zoli, to the much more pragmatic Iacchini that brought them 7 points in 3 matches. So tell me a little bit about Bologna. This is a team you and I have been talking a lot about offline. I have Chievo, you have Bologna. Do you think they are going to be able to stay up in Serie A? And do you think Pippo Inzaghi is going to be able to eat the panettone? For those of you that aren't too familiar with Serie A, that means is Inzaghi going to be able to hold on at least until Christmas?
I think they will. I think Genoa will be the one that goes down if they don't replace Juric. I think Inzaghi still has control of the dressing room. For example, there was a report that after the Genoa-Torino game that Lapadula dropped his shirt in front of the bench. And I think Juric will be the first to go before Inzaghi because Bologna confirmed him after their game against Sampdoria.
Okay, so you still feel pretty confident about Bologna. Yeah. And you're going to be bold with Genoa being the third team to go down. I think the other two are pretty evident there. So another match I want to ask you about, two teams that actually had a fairly exciting match on Saturday, Empoli and Spal. So tell me a little bit, what has stood out to you about these two teams? Based on what you told me about Genoa, it seemed you're pretty confident they're going to stay up in Serie A.
Well, Spal, Semplici, who's been there for a few years, knows what to do with the team. Their 3-5-2 is very compact and can able to break quickly on the counterattack. They have Kurtic, who scored today, scored yesterday, and also Empoli. After Iacchini came on board, Caputo's finding the back of the net was struggling when they had to replace Andrea Zoli. So I think Empoli will survive, and same with Spal. I think they have the quality to do so.
Okay, so now let's move a little bit higher up in the standings and talk about two teams that are kind of going in opposite directions. I think Fiorentina had gotten off to a very good start. They haven't won, I think now it's 6 matches in a row. They lost heavily against bitter rival Juve at home 3-0, which is definitely not a good thing if you're the manager based on the rivalry against Juve. On the other side of the ledger, we have Torino, who had a fairly impressive win against Genoa. Today, Mazzarri's back. He was ill. He's coming back. It seems to me Torino's trending up and Fiorentina's trending down. Without being a prisoner at the moment, which of these two teams do you have more confidence going in for the rest of the season?
I think Torino is finally starting to find their form. Belotti had a good game today. And Fiorentina struggled against Juventus. They're too fast. And, you know, without Simeone and Chiesa, Fiorentina will struggle because they lost on their back in Fiorentina. And the midfield wasn't the greatest after losing Badelia this season.
Okay, so let's talk about Belotti. You mentioned him. He's been on actually a pretty good roll. It's been a difficult season for him. He was coming off a very disappointing season, but that was mainly more due to injuries. This summer, Mazzarri said he was going to really build the team around him. There was a lot of hype that this was going to be a strong comeback season for Belotti. That didn't happen at first, but he's been doing better. He also lost his spot on the Italian national team. But he's been doing pretty well recently. Piontek, on the other hand, off to a sensational start at Genoa, breaking all sorts of records, or I would say matching all sorts of records from players. Really a high caliber. Ever since Ballardini was gone, hasn't scored since, and it's been a while. So I'm not going to ask you total goals for the season. I'm just going to ask you from this moment now until the end of the season, who do you think is going to score more goals between Belotti and Piontek?
Piontek, I think after what he's shown at the start of the season, I think he has the potential to bring it back. With Belotti, I think it's still going to take a little bit more time before he catches his form. He's starting to put in consistent games. So I think I give it a few more weeks, but I think Piontek will finish ahead of him just based from the sensational form at the beginning of the season.
Okay. All right. So let me ask you just in general, you watch a lot of these teams in the mid-table, lower tables. I watch quite a bit. Sometimes, I'm not going to lie, it's an opportunity for me to catch up with like writing articles or whatnot, but I know you're really passionate about them. Any players that we haven't talked about on the mid to lower table teams that have impressed you recently?
Laguna, ever since Iacchini came on board, I know it was last week, I scored a double. And I mentioned him at the beginning of the season. So if it took a change in manager to bring him up, but I think he's going to make a bigger impact later on in the season.
Yeah, and for Empoli standard, I think it was the most expensive incoming transfer ever. And probably Zamparini's last big sale at Palermo. So, Paolo, before I let you go, I know I always say you're a mid-table expert and few people love the Azzurri as much as you do. You always have a lot of takes on the Azzurri. So let me ask you, kind of what's your assessment on what you've seen recently on the Azzurri, any players that you think Mancini should consider using that he hasn't yet?
The goal scoring is a bit of a struggle. That's the problem when you use a lot of players. You don't find consistency, and when there's no consistency, you can't score. I still think Cutrone deserves a place on the team. His recent goal scoring confirms that. Also, I just want to mention the group for the Euro 2020 qualifying was released today. If Italy doesn't finish in a group with only Bosnia or Herzegovina as their main competition, then we have a problem. So it's looking good, but there's still a few problems as there would be with a new manager.
Okay, so let me just ask you real quick, what was your reaction to the draw today at the Euro? Do you feel pretty good? Mancini said that as long as Italy didn't get Germany, he was going to be happy no matter what. Is your reaction pretty good? Do you think they're going to have a fairly easy time to at least get to the Euro?
Yeah, so it's they should finish first. If they don't, it's going to be it's going to be a problem. It'll be right back to square one.
Okay, Paolo, I can't thank you enough. Always a pleasure to have you on. Everyone follow Paolo if you want to get a great takes on what we see on the mid-table, but also the transfer window is coming up pretty soon. We are less than a month away. We've started to have transfer rumors on the Marzo site. Paolo's one of the veterans on the team. You can follow him at Ilcano22. Paolo, thanks so much for joining me and have a great evening.
Anytime, David. It's always a pleasure.